digital has given every voice a platform. Will yours be heard? If there is one skill that everyone needs today, it's not just the ability to communicate, it is the ability to connect. My mission is to give you the communication skills you'll need to inform and inspire, sometimes using digital tools, but always with human outcomes. This episode, my guest is Stephanie Campos.
I think a big part of self-branding, of getting what you want, is showing up. And I think that a lot of times, especially as minorities or marginalized communities, we're not allowed in the room. We haven't earned a seat at the table, and that's just not true. You know, I think that what I found, at least, is that when I showed up, people were not only grateful, but they were encouraging, they were supportive, they were motivating of my dreams, and that really fueled me to want to do the same for others and really shine a light and say, come on in, the water's fine. People are nice, and it doesn't be intimidating despite what you think.
Let's begin. Stephanie Campos is the founder of Miss Bay Maven Consulting, working with individuals and companies like Coca-Cola and Tabasco on branding and strategic partnerships. She is also the senior communications manager at Wonolo, an on-demand staffing platform providing flexible and fulfilling work for gig workers across the U.S. Stephanie Campos, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
I thought maybe we could start out by talking about your role at Wonolo.
So I've been with Wonolo since last May, and I've been in the Bay Area from Dallas. It'll be 2 years in May. So this is my second place that I've landed, but I really feel like it's exactly what I came here in search for. So I am working for a gig app marketplace. So basically what that means is people can come onto our platform, take jobs across warehouse, admin, event staff across the country, hence the work now locally. So where do you want to work now and what's local for you? And what I'm charged with as senior communications manager is really looking at how can we colloquialize the messaging that we have and really for impact. So impact for us means more jobs worked, more clarity around the jobs that are being taken, and so forth, and that people feel that we're really guiding them and that we're their friend along the way. Beyond that, there's everything from managing the public relations relationship to the different content that we put out, both on our business side and for the people that are looking to take up the jobs. So it's a big task, but it's really exciting to have landed at a startup that I'm able to kind of do so much.
That's awesome to be able to work for a startup. I know it's a lot of fun and a lot of hard work. But thinking about your role as a communications expert and seeing what's happening today, particularly in tech, do you think there's a resurgence or maybe even a renaissance taking place when it comes to communications and marketing?
Yeah, I think to some extent. I think that people have always known that communication is important, obviously, but a lot of them paused. By them, I mean companies or individuals, when it came to digital marketing and communication and their marketing strategy in general, because gone are the days of historic traditional marketing. And so it was a little bit more difficult to kind of keep up with everything that's coming out and to really define what was best for the person or the company. So people just haven't done any of it. And I think now we're seeing case studies come out of best practices and we're seeing continued excitement. So brands are now kind of catching up to things.
Speaking of brand, you are also a brand strategy consultant and an Instagram influencer, also known as Miss Bay Maven. Tell us about your consultancy.
Yeah, so this was really an extension of my brand in Dallas, which was Miss Dallas Maven, which I did consulting there under that name. And really, I just continued having interest in people wanting to come back, whether that be primarily one-off instances. So anywhere from running an event, connecting with local influencers to then really maximize the impact, or if that's just taking a look at what's the status quo, what are our competitors doing, and how can we adapt and improve upon what's out there. So it really ranges, again, kind of thinking of that toolbox is varied when it comes to digital marketing, PR, communications. So I just offer everything up and kind of fill in the gaps.
Well, you've done a fantastic job. In fact, you have a fairly significant following on Instagram. How did you get started?
Yeah, I always used to say one bite and one event at a time, but it really was that way. I was born and raised in Dallas. I always say also it was the city that my dreams were born and came to life in. And what that meant for me was I saw so much beauty, I still do, in the city and in the people and the projects that were happening. And I wanted to be a part of it, and everything from new restaurants to the latest events, whether I was entering contests to win. Actually, my first one of my first posts at a dinner was a contest that I entered from another Instagrammer. And I thought, man, if I want to be this person, I want to live the Anthony Bourdain life. I don't know what that means, you know, putting my background in communication together with my passion for life. But I landed on posting eating out. And then I asked my audience, who's the best cupcake people in Dallas? And I thought, okay, what can I goal myself with? What giveaway can I do? And I thought, cupcakes, that'll probably be easy. So then they all voted. And I actually went in, I mean, by all, it was probably 20 people, but I went into the cupcakery and I said, hey, my followers have voted you the best cupcake place in Dallas. I'd love to reward them by offering free cupcakes to the first 10 people. Can we make a deal? I had no experience in this. I had no idea how it worked, but I just picked some rules and went and pitched it, and it worked. And that really fueled my passion and excitement. And I saw that I was opening doors by just defining the rules for myself, and people were really receptive, and I was really grateful for that.
Well, it certainly set up a pattern. I have posted on some of your posts jokingly that I am jealous of your life because of the great food that you've been able to enjoy and the wonderful places you've been able to visit. Tell me how that works. How did you begin to make those contacts with individuals? Did they seek you out? What was the process behind that?
Yeah, you know, it was a little bit of a combination. Before I self-branded, I was always looking to get into event planning and PR, especially with the Movers and Shakers in Dallas. And what that meant for me was volunteering at a lot of high-end events. In conjunction, mission-driven. So I was working at nonprofits, and one nonprofit that I really credit my career to was Dwell with Dignity. I was blogging for them, and they're an in-between housing nonprofit. And what they do is they help people dwell with dignity, and they get people to donate things like furniture and rugs. And I was writing about sponsors for free. I was volunteering at the events for free, and then I started running their Instagram for free, and that led to them saying, you know, you're doing a lot of work for us. We'd like to pay you for this. So couple that with me going up to restaurants and pitching things, and I was just on a roll, and they kind of happened at the same time. So it was just this perfect kismet of events.
That's interesting. And it sounds like it did not require a whole lot of equipment or resources, but just your passion and energy and your willingness to do it.
Yeah, I think a big part of self-branding, of getting what you want, is showing up. And I think that a lot of times, especially as minorities or marginalized communities, we're not allowed in the room. We haven't earned a seat at the table, and that's just not true. You know, I think that what I found, at least, is that when I showed up, people were not only grateful, but they were encouraging, they were supportive, they were motivating of my dreams, and that really fueled me to want to do the same for others and really shine a light and say, come on in, the water's fine. People are nice, and it doesn't have to be intimidating despite what you think, you know, the stereotype may be.
You know, just talking with you for the first time, you have so much energy, and I'm wondering if you are thinking about doing more videos. I do follow you on Instagram, and I see some sometimes. I think you should definitely consider doing a podcast. I think you'd be great. But I wanted to know if Instagram really is your main platform for communication, and why.
Yeah. So when I was in Dallas, I did connect with local affiliates like ABC, and I did online corresponding. I was actually the first person who was not a reporter, but was an Instagram influencer, to be recruited for something they called North Texas Now. And it was this kind of pilot program where they were with influencers, and they sent us to different events. And that was really fun. They had a production team. So I was recording, and I had my tripod, and I was everywhere. It was difficult, but really rewarding. So that was kind of my first stint in video. And then I've done videos for partners across the time, or I'll do videos where I'll just offer my personality for their platform. But currently in my role here at Wonolo, I'm taking this as my my primary means of where I'm putting my passion towards. So one of the things that I have done is extend our awareness and our interactions with our Winola community to video. So what we do is we make announcements in our app. You click the app and it takes you to our YouTube and you can see my face. So if you want to see more of me, feel free to become a Winola-er. But that's really where my, you know, my energy is spent these days.
You know, it seems that Instagram really affords you the perfect platform for your message.
Yeah. You know, I utilize Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. I think I prefer Instagram because it's my, you know, it was what fueled me to get here. It's my safe zone. That said, you know, everyone has the, you know, the big A, the algorithm conversation. And we know over time, they're always changing. They're not predictable, not reliable. It's really hard to project numbers and things like that. So I think it's important for anyone looking to self-brand to, one, know themselves and their audience. I particularly love taking photos, love writing. That works well for me on Instagram. But I also love LinkedIn for the exact same reasons. But that said, my audience is very wildly. If you look at Instagram, it's way more diverse. A lot of women, a lot of, you may be surprised, like older, but it also ranges from 18 to 65 pretty equally. When I look at LinkedIn, it's a lot more professional, a lot tighter margins on the connections, probably closer to, I would say, 28 to, you know, 65 plus. And there, people are looking for different things. They want information. They want thought leadership. They don't always want the passionate rant that I would sometimes utilize more on Instagram. So I really like being jovial and fun. And you can do a little bit of that on LinkedIn. But for me, LinkedIn is a means to an end. It's, I'm here to show you a product in a fun way, and hopefully you'll bite.
You've developed a lot of mastery in communications and clearly social media branding, but I know there are steps to get there. I'd like to go back in time. After college, you went on to launch your first PR company and then a digital marketing agency. Tell us the stories behind that.
Yeah, so I always knew that I wanted to solve problems at scale. I didn't know what that meant, but I also knew in middle school that I wanted, air quotes, to own a PR company. And I wanted three of them, and they were going to be in Boston, New York, and LA, because at the time, those are the three leading places for PR. And I, that was my mantra from middle school on. So coupled that with my volunteer work, with internships, I interned at the Dallas Stars in college, which really opened my eyes to the world of business. So I started in sales, figured out the high turnaround and high stress was not for me, saw community marketing and thought, that looks fun. I like event planning. Oh, and they're raising money and they're donating it to the community. I want to know more about this. And the community marketing person really became a mentor for me. Strong businesswoman, great head on her shoulders, you know, mission driven, and got it done. And really allowed me an opportunity to figure out what my assets were. And that was working with the community. It was strategizing how and, you know, and delivering. So when I got out on my own, the first thing that I did was start an event planning company with a partner that wasn't as passionate as me. So quickly learned it wasn't going to work out. And I thought, what's next? And so over time, you know, I went from partner to partner, had some that sustained more than others. But in the end, it came back to what fulfilled me. And even though I ran a digital marketing agency for a few years, it really wasn't my ammo. I wasn't looking to extend my portfolio to offer 20 different services. What I wanted was to do good work and focus on my strengths. And at the time, that was pitching PR. It was branding other people. And then I came into an interesting dilemma where the line of my business and my brand, there really wasn't one. And it was, I was raising my business because of my brand. And then it was, well, what opportunity is this for? Is it for the business? Is it for my brand? So you really have to be careful when you're thinking about those things. And I realized that I was able to very honestly monetize quicker and at a higher dollar amount through consulting and through just selling myself and through not spreading myself so thin across 20 clients and 10 people that reported to me, et cetera, et cetera.
What an interesting story. And I want to begin first with the fact that you realized at such a young age, I think you said 10, that you wanted to be in PR. So that's commendable. But I think what's amazing is that you knew in what cities you wanted to open up your own business. That's pretty unusual. Tell me, is your family in PR? Do you come from a family of moguls? Tell me the story behind that.
Yeah, so I 100% attribute all of my focus on education and my career to my parents. But both educators. My mom was a second grade teacher. My dad went to law school, worked for the government for many years. And in middle school, he said, okay, we know you're a great opera singer. I thought I was going to go to Juilliard. That did not happen. He said, but if you do not become an opera singer as a career, what else are you interested in? What other things would you may want to fall back on? And I thought, I don't know. I like talking. And he said, okay, go ahead and put talking into the government. It was the GSA, so Government Services Agency. And basically it tells you what kind of, services are out there. Occupational handbook is what it is. It's been so many years. But I went to the occupational handbook and I searched and I found PR, and that gave me all the information. And I just remember something lit up inside of me. And I thought, this is it. I got it. I don't have to look any further. And honestly, it was the first or second search, and there it was.
And that was it. You were hooked.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to start your own business. It's something else to start your own business as a woman. And it's certainly something else to start your own business as a woman of color. And especially at a young age, and maybe not having all the connections at first. Who gave you the permission to do this?
I gave it to myself. I think kind of going back to my, opening statement of we minorities, we women, we marginalized communities wait for everyone to tell us it's okay, like go for it. And I think that's the wrong narrative. And I think that it's not until you see other people living the truth that you dream for yourself, that you believe it's real, right? And I think that, I've heard a lot of leaders like Oprah. I was an Oprah kid, right? I would come home every day, watch Oprah and see what she was doing. And Ellen now, right? But I think that I look at these leaders and I think like, wow, like these people were told they couldn't. And in fact, by all, accounts, they shouldn't have. And yet they did. And what differentiated them? It was persistence. It was passion. And it was not taking BS from anybody, right? It was like, I'm going to do this because everything inside of me tells me it's the only way that I'm going to be fulfilled, really. And for me, I was applying to so many jobs in Dallas, and I was writing, papers. They weren't asking for them, but I was saying, look at me, look at me. And no one was looking at me. And I thought, you know what? That's fine. I'll show you who I am. And that's where Instagram really came in for me. And then they started beating down the doors for me. And that's when brands like Coca-Cola came to me and, candidly saying, minority influencer in Dallas, you speak exactly to our audience. And to me, what an amazing full circle moment that was.
Wow. I bet that's quite a moment. I'm thinking, I wonder if there are differences for men and women in the digital media space. I mean, I feel like more women are taking on digital media or branding roles, but I'm not certain they're taking on the leadership roles or being given leadership roles. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. People have always been very responsive to my passion, my energy, and I have never been shy to ask my worth. In fact, I always tell people, think about how much a job is worth to you and double it. And you'll be very surprised how often you get the double amount. Because you just don't know, right? When you're starting out, you really have to be bold. And it's scary. It's scary to define your worth. And I think you don't know until you ask. And I remember there was a time when someone was trying to get me to work full time for them, and I was doing my own thing and candidly, maybe making 30, 40, it was like 1,000 right when I graduated. And I said, I'll work for you for 50,000. And at the time, this isn't that long ago, but luckily I do make more than that now. But in retrospect, I sold myself so short. And to them though, in the moment, it was really high because they didn't have it, right? They were like, oh, we can get her for cheap. So you really know, right? Someone's conviction. And had it been worth it, they would have worked with me. And I feel like, again, just going back to being a woman, there is no playbook. And it can be very difficult to find alliances, but they are out there. And I think that serving as one yourself is where it starts. So if you see younger women starting out, align yourself. You see people that have already led the path that you want to go, reach out to them. But don't reach out and say, may I pick your brain? That's the worst thing you can say. Reach out with the specific questions. And then you get more people helping there. But for me, I didn't have a lot of that. I did reach out a lot. I will say I did not reach out to minority women. I'm not saying that's a part of the conversation, but that was my experience in Dallas. But that really fueled me and still to this day is a real reason why I'm champion for women and the gender pay gap and everything that follows under that bullet point, because I know how difficult it was for me to open some of these doors.
That's very inspiring. It reminds me of something I read in a book called Leapfrog by Natalie Molina Nino, where she talks about how patience is not a virtue. Patience is not a virtue. And basically what she says is that women for a long time have been expected to, quote, wait their turn, right? One day there'll be pay parity. But she says, no, the time is now, know your worth, and advance to ensure that you receive it. And that sounds like what you've done.
Yeah, well, and I think also a lot of people struggle because they're in a full time and it's not their passion and they don't know how to get out of it. But it's just start. Figure out where you want to go and then work backwards. What's the first step? Also, don't get stuck on what you think you need to be. I really thought my first company, I needed a logo. It's all I cared about. So much to the point that I spent a whole like 4 months working events, working PR in exchange for a logo from a designer. And it didn't even end up working out. So, I mean, I learned that lesson really fast. And I also learned logos don't really matter. And nowadays you have places like Upwork, et cetera, et cetera, right? But I think that people get overwhelmed and they don't know where to start. And it's like, just go. And if you fail, you learned a lesson. Great. You've done more than a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take this a step further. Let's say that someone out there listening is ready to go. And they realize that they're presence on social is very important. Their brand is important. What basic best practices can you give them to establish a brand on social media, say on a LinkedIn or Instagram?
Yeah, I would say going back to looking at people that are doing things that you want to do, pick 5 people across every single platform that you admire and pick people that have maybe small, medium, and large brands. And when I say that is because you'll notice trends. You'll notice that they're always tagging their friends. They're always posting videos. They're always replying back to comments. Those are things that apply no matter what platform that you're on. And it helps to test things along the way. When you kind of organize your thoughts and just really kind of be specific with your intent and always be testing.
I like that. ABT, always be testing. Sounds good. You know, the digital space is always changing. It will continue to change probably at an even faster rate. I wonder if you see any disruptors coming. As you look out over the horizon, what changes do you see taking place in the digital space for social media?
Well, I think we can expect the not slowing down of information for sure. We've seen that. I think even back to just high school and encyclopedias, and it blows my mind. But everything is going to continue to be at our fingertips. And I think that to the point where it's not just information telling, but we're going to see more interactive. We're going to see more information sharing in a rapid pace. Thinking about just small things like that we see now with Instagram, even where you can do live feeds in real time, that opens the conversation, you know, to have companies and thought leaders together. But we even see people doing videos like that on LinkedIn. So I think continuing to evolve with the platforms is going to be important, but to also understand, is AI the next big thing for me? For a lot of people, it's not. But one thing that I've seen recently is examples of people using it to train employees, right? So it's going to go out of just digital marketing and into digital and IoT. And really, if you're not watching it, you can get lost and left behind.
I definitely agree with that. So for the student who may be listening to the show, who is about to prepare for the work world, what would you encourage them to do as far as building their brand right now?
Well, I think it starts with knowing yourself. You can't promote anything if you don't know what you're selling or why. So you have to define who do you want people to know you as and what are you passionate about? Where is your audience? Where do you want to be in 5 years, right? Like, who do you want to find you? For me, there was no LinkedIn at the time of Instagram. So I was able to engage with the mayor's office, engage with the museums, and have them see me right away. A lot of people that may not work nowadays, right? But if you know who you want to find you, then it'll help define what platform you start with. But also, you have to know yourself. And I think a lot of people say, well, I'm just so random. I have so many different interests and none of them really match. Forget that. Get over it, because your people will always find you. Now, you don't want 20 different things. Keep it 3 to 5. 3 to 5 things you're passionate about. Start creating content across those things and you'll find quickly what you really enjoy. And then the other things will weed themselves out. You'll also see how people react to you. And then the next step beyond that is going and finding like-minded brands. So, okay, now I have my content. Now I know who I want to find me. Now I'm actually going to go on the back end. I'm going to set up auto likes. So things like Likestagram will like geotags. So I want everyone in Dallas and New York to see me. Great. I'm going to like this automatically. So finding what tools are out there to help you is the next step, but that's kind of, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 steps to getting started.
This is fantastic advice. I'm going to note it for myself. You know, I'm just thinking for folks who are in school, in university, who are taking marketing or majoring in marketing, I wonder if these things are being taught today, or are they so new that folks really don't appreciate and find out about these things until they're out in the work world. What do you think?
You know, it was absolutely the case when I was in school that there was no social media class because there was no social media. There was a little bit of Facebook, right? Facebook, I joined when I started college. So there's that for reference. And it's been 10 years post-grad. So I think a lot has changed in the past 10 years. And to that point, even when I lived in Dallas, I had a follower who was working in the athletic department at TCU. So I went and talked to the athletes about branding, which I thought was really interesting, right? These are people who were majority softball and baseball players who were going to face this exact dilemma. And I asked them, who's the most famous in the room? And they all pointed to one person, you know, who was the MVP. And then I asked, who wants more followers? And they all raised their hand. And this was after I'd gone through a beautiful, I thought, 10-page deck on self-branding. But all they wanted to know was how to get more followers. So I, and those are things like, you know, finding free tools. And I can't imagine that things like how to get more followers are really being taught in school. I do think things like digital marketing and, you know, how companies are utilizing platforms to release, you know, maybe announcements of the latest technology, et cetera, when it comes to kind of comprehensive branding. I think, sure, it's being included. But I think the nooks and crannies of actually how to do it, a lot of people aren't teaching.
So it sounds like there will be some real world training. We'll have to go out and learn from others. And speaking of that, are you still learning from others? Who amongst the many influencers out there do you take note of and that inspire you?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I learn from books. I learn from people that are not actually in the field that I'm currently operating in, which is interesting. So I'm reading a lot about social impact and measuring what matters. So right now, I'm reading Real Impact by Morgan Simon. So I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but a Bay Area person who's talking about the new economics of social change, right? And I'm thinking, how can I take my digital marketing and my community building and really make lasting impression within my company? So that's kind of where my mind is. But beyond that, I think Chelsea Cross is a really well-known millennial podcaster I connected with when I kind of first started, and I've seen that she's still in the loop. I think there's a lot of really great young people on LinkedIn. I find them probably in the same way that you do, where it's I find one and then I find all of them because they all tag each other. So I can't list all 20 of them, but all the same people that would be at any LinkedIn conference. I think they're all doing, you know, great things to keep the brand alive. By the, I mean the LinkedIn brand. But beyond that, it's really hard to keep up with everyone and everything. I can kind of only keep up with, you know, where my passions are.
So at the heart of this podcast, it's really a focus on leveraging digital tools in the communication space to have human outcomes. And so I kind of want to round out the conversation with your best practices, your advice on how to be good, genuine digital communicators to really have the all-important human outcome that we're looking for.
Yeah, I'd say just because someone else is doing it doesn't mean you should. So a lot of times people will say, "Oh, I love this campaign, let's replicate it." But you really have to think, why did they do that? Is it going to align with our business goal? Sometimes it does, but quite frankly, more often than not, it does not align. So really being intentional about what kind of content you're choosing to create, measure, and then disseminate. And then I think just starting and listening to other people. It's again, I understand how overwhelming it can be, especially when you're at point one, but once you start kind of digging, you really find what works for you and what doesn't, and you begin to see the world in digital in, I think, a completely different way. So I think staying open to possibilities while keeping your own brand in mind are the way to go.
Thank you for that. You know, there is one more question that I wanted to ask you a little bit earlier. You know, today we're seeing social media being used to communicate in all areas of life and in the professional world and even politics. So Twitter has certainly been a platform that has been used, certainly by this president, for the past couple of years now. And it appears that some new members of Congress are leveraging Instagram. Do you foresee the social media space leveraged by politicians even more in the future?
Yes, what an interesting question. I think I have a lot of thoughts around this. I'll say this, absolutely. Yes, definitively, without a question, it's here, it's not going anywhere. You can see that as evident with Obama. It really transformed the way we think about campaigns, the way we think about communicating with potential, people running for presidents and then presidents themselves, right? So a lot to consider, a lot of information very quickly moving. So what somebody once said, the more you say, the more you give reason for people not to like you, right? So for better or worse, there's going to be a lot of information. In regards to the Congresswoman, without just dancing around, I couldn't be more proud of her. I just think she really nails it. She's eloquent, she's purposeful, she knows who she is and what she's trying to say, and she's thoughtful, right? Like she understands, hey, I'm going to put this message out because it's educating people. I'm going to paint some context around the conversation because nobody has before. I'm not going to back down. I'm going to hold my head up high. And when they make fun of me, I'm going to dance because that's all you can do, right? Is be firm in who you are, going back to any self-branding. And once you are unshakable. And I think that the sky is the limit for her and for this country when it comes to communicating on issues. That's the good side of the coin. I think the negative side is it highlights ignorance very quickly. It allows for points of a debate that really are null and void and shouldn't even be brought up, but they get these bunny trails and these tangents, which you could see traditional media when you think about the TV, right? You have an interviewer on and they go this way where you're trying to go that way. But social media is everybody at once. It's a place where people can get very emotional and what you have a quick trigger and that emotion comes out, you can, have a foot in the mouth really quickly. So it'll definitely be interesting just thinking about all of the Democratic nominees, right, that have already announced their candidacy. It'll be a very interesting couple of years. And I, for one, will be staying tuned.
It is interesting. Politics aside, I've seen her posts, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and you know what she's essentially done is documented her experience in Congress, which has been quite educational, because as you put it, it puts her on context as regards to what she does. And I suspect that that will be the case in other types of roles, even outside of politics, where people can really get a firsthand into what someone does. And social media becomes sort of like a window into their world.
Yeah, I love it, right? It's that thought leadership. It's that who told her she could? Oh, wait, nobody. Then she did, and now everyone follows, right? It's the same thing. Yeah, but exactly aligned, I think.
Stephanie, thank you so much. This has been such a wonderful conversation. You bring so much energy to it, and more importantly, education. So informative. I learned such a great deal. I'm just curious, what do you see yourself doing 5 years from now?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me. This has been great. But in 5 years, I see myself continuing to follow my passion in a strategic, thoughtful way. I have not always had all of the answers looking back on my life, but I've always ended up right exactly where I'm supposed to be. So hopefully that will be making a difference in people's lives and having fun along the way.
Well, that's our episode for today. Thank you so much for joining me. If you liked this episode, please indicate so on the particular podcast app that you're using. And of course, if you are so inclined, subscribe to this podcast for future upcoming episodes. You will not want to miss them. Okay, take care.